Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Yes, it's Friday. It's just gone 3 o'clock, so it is Movies and Booze, where we're going to talk about movies, some lovely drinks and some strange stories from the world of show business. This is John Fardy in for Sean today. You can WhatsApp us 087 1400 106. You can text us 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. And of course, you can email us at afternoon@newstalk.com. I'm joined in studio by the wine man, Leslie Williams, by the showbiz lady, Fionnuala Jones, and also by Olivia Fahey, who's going to talk all about this week's new cinema releases and streaming releases. However, I'm not sure if Sean usually does this, but I have to break rank and go back to a text from about an hour ago that I didn't get to, because we were talking about the invisible string theory. That was not a physics thing. Well, it might be, but we were talking about the romantic one. The idea that your soulmate is out there and there is an invisible string binding you together. And if you allow it, it will eventually come to fruition. We were talking to Frances Kelleher, a dating expert. A lot of people were kind of irate by what they saw as her old-fashioned way of viewing, certainly in heterosexual relationships, the division between men and women. However, talking about, you know, random meetings and staying together, I did want to bring you this text. Had a last-minute invite to a neighbour's wedding in Hong Kong. I was in London at the time, had broken up with a girl at the time, so I had no interest in seeking someone out. Thought I'd go and enjoy the experience and meet the woman I was meant to be with on the first day. I just knew. 2 year long distance, we had to work very hard on the relationship, but we figured it out. You have to put the effort in to the person so they feel worthy and vice versa. 16 years later and two beautiful children, we still remind ourselves that we take nothing for granted as the odds were stacked against us. So there you go.
Lovely.
I just, it's not signed, so do let us know. But hats off to you, and hats off to my esteemed panel. Leslie, what wine are we going to be talking about?
So we have a Breton wine. I'm insisting on calling it a Breton wine, which is a Muscadet from the Loire, because the Loire gets the region got stolen by the French from the Bretons.
Okay.
And I just come back from the Interceltic Breton Music Festival, where I heard Breton spoken on the street. And we forget that there is a language called, it's like Welsh or Cornish. But I've always loved Muscadet, and it's perfect for like summer wines. And
the Interceltic or Interceltic Music Festival is lots of Celtic musicians.
So it is.
Or lots of Celtic football players.
No. No, that'd be funny. it is. It's founded by Paulie Mongeri back in the 50s. He's the guy who invented the baga, the Breton large pipes, which he expanded up from the binu, which was the traditional small pipes. And if you hear it, it's a little cross between the Scottish bagpipes and the Galician pipes. It's a big, and it's quite a mellow sound, not as mellow as the Uilleann pipes. There was Breton, that and the bombard, which is a woodwind instrument. So that was the original festival, was pipers. And my wife's dad, Ignatius Lambert, was involved in the early days as well, because he had piping festivals in Ireland. And then, so my wife has been going to this festival since she was a kid. At age 12, she found Luke Kelly asleep on the kitchen table with his arms stretched out in the Mongeri's house. So it's that kind of a festival.
Wow, there's a lot going on here. How long have we got?
Asturias, Cornwall, Wales, Scotland, Galicia, Ireland, and the one other, I think. What have I left out? It's a big festival, a million people. It's now huge. It was much smaller back in the 70s. Originally kind of designed around around the Port of Pêche, the fishing port, because Lorient's the second biggest fishing harbour in France.
Okay.
And we forget about Lorient. It used to be this beautiful town, planned town on Orient. It was where the French East India Company was based, but it was bombed into obliteration by the Nazis during the second, by the British trying to get the Nazis, because they had a submarine base there. And it's an interesting town. I was in a little fishing village outside them.
Okay, and we definitely don't have time for this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. When you said the Lambert, is that of Lambert Theatre?
No connection.
No. Okay. No. Well, we don't have to go down that road.
No, exactly. So that's the white, and then the red is from the very other side of the Loire, which is down the Massif Central, and that's from Wine Mason, and it's a Gamay based wine, because even though you're technically on the Loire, you're actually closer to Beaujolais.
Okay.
Because the Loire goes all the way down in the middle.
Okay.
I'll stop talking now.
No. That's why you're here. A Gamay.
Yes.
Okay. And that's going to taste what?
So bright cherry fruits, ripe. Okay. I've actually chilled it, so it'll be a little cooler. So it is possible to drink this red wine in these warm weather days that we are having.
And you chill it by?
Stick it in the fridge.
Oh, who knew? Fionnuala, the thing just came across our desk literally before we came on air. Anne Hathaway, who's going to feature in one of Olivia's movies.
Yes.
But she's concerned about dogs in movies dying.
Yes, she is starring in The End of Oak Street, which Olivia will be reviewing a little bit later on. And she's been on the press circuit talking about it, talking about the film. And she is putting forward this idea that maybe if a film features the death of a dog, that it should have a specific rating. She's actually advocating for an R rating because people find it so traumatic. This kind of came around because people were asking her about this particular film. Again, I haven't seen it. Again, Olivia will glean more later on. They are a family. They have a family dog. And she has said that she has had people come up to her and in interviews as well, ask, does the dog like make it through this film? Spoiler, it does. Don't worry. It's kind of not related to the film at all. But she has said basically that maybe this should be something that people consider going forward, because I'm pretty sure maybe this is just for video games or maybe this is a different categorization. There is definitely a website, I think, that you can search whether a piece of media features a dog dying in it, so you know before you watch it. And I think there's another one. I do think I'm mixing it up with ones for video games where you can learn if you're playing as a character, if you can pet a dog in the video game. Two separate things. But anyway, Anne Hathaway is very much all for maybe these films having a rated R because it can be so traumatic for people.
Yeah, well, I can see the logic in that. I mean, we worry about kids being exposed to sex, violence, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the passing of a pet can be, and I speak with some authority, it's a long time ago, I'm going to keep it together, don't worry. But it can be a profound loss, an animal joining your life. And kids can find it hard to fathom, and even more so than relatives dying, in my experience. Pets dying for kids is very hard to handle.
Now, she's put it down to the John Wick film, and that's why people are traumatized. But again, I'm like, children probably shouldn't have been going to the John Wick film in the first place if they were. But again, it can affect other people, as you said, not just children. So food for thought. Look, I suppose those ratings are in place for a reason. Mm. Rated R seems a lot when you consider it takes a lot for a film.
Remind people what rated R means then.
Rated R is like kind of the highest rating. I'm pretty sure, I think we have in Ireland it would be the 18s. Yeah, but R is like, you know, flesh, guts, rock and roll, the whole shebang, basically. Like, it's, I can't think of an example off the top of my head now. I'm sure people are texting.
Or seems a little high, all right. I mean, most 15-year-olds can probably handle, you know, a pooch dying.
Yeah, and then there's also a thing, you know, and God, I can't believe I'm about to summon this word on
this
show.
Go on, go on. I love this.
The concept of, you know, like, trigger warnings, and I'm doing inverted commas because they did used to mean something for people who had actually gone through trauma and stuff. Mm. Like, it was used in a therapy setting, and now it kind of, I fear it has been diluted because of social media and everything like that. Like, I don't know how you bring that in without also, like, you know what I mean? Is this a step too far then to say, like the dog is going to die in this? Do you know what I mean?
No,
I don't know.
That's also.
Also, what about the cats? Sorry, as a cat person, I have to sit here and say we should be advocating for all animals then. No, because as someone who rewatched, I watched Love Hate for the first time this year and I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it any less traumatic, girls, especially as someone who owns a cat, you know?
Yeah, no, good point as well. You make lots of good points.
I try. I really try.
Joe and Goa has texted in. Presumably this is the website you were referring to. Does the dog die.com.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joe and Goa.
Yeah.
Death is part of life and can be very sad, but children need to know it happens and we can't protect them from everything. Yeah, I guess that, but I still think, you know, an 8-year-old watching a dog dying might be a bit much. For the love of God, name some series I can watch with himself now that Love Island is over. Kitty. The Sopranos. I don't know. Turn on Netflix.
Reacher has just dropped on Prime. Reacher's great.
Yeah. So I presume Kitty means that herself and himself were watching Love Island and nothing else.
Probably,
Widow's
what
Bay.
Do they mean, Olivia?
I just finished Widow's Bay, good as everyone says. Really, really good.
Can I recommend Lucky? I've been watching Lucky with Anya Taylor-Joy. It's female led.
On Apple
Annette
TV.
Bening, as evil as you've ever seen her. And she was great. And the women are leading this, but there's loads of killing and jumping and running around and stuff. Which so the bloke will be happy because it's pretty girls, and there, and she'll be happy because it's female led, and there's lots of action.
But maybe she wants to see loads of killing as well.
Well, yes, possibly.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. The saddest part of Dances with Wolves was the shooting of the wolf. I forgot about that. Yeah. And of course, never heard such a load of rubbish as the pet death warning. Children have to learn about death, and that's a great way of preparing them. No wonder we have so many mental health problems in young people. Let's not get into that.
Now, jeez.
Olivia, what movies are you? Hi, how are you? What movies are you going to be talking about?
Yeah, so as you guys have alluded to, I have The End of Oak Street, which is our Anne Hathaway, Ewan McGregor-led flick, where a family, their entire neighbourhood gets transported from 1982 to the prehistoric era. Ah. And there are dinosaurs roaming their neighbourhood, and they're trying to basically figure out how the heck are they going to survive in prehistoric times.
And you were wearing a funky t-shirt, which has Jurassic Park on it, but the Kaiser Chiefs written on it. So was this a nod to Jurassic Park today in particular?
Yeah, it was. I try and, you know, dress to be like what I'm talking about.
Kind of method dressing.
I'm method dressing, exactly. I'm channeling Zendaya today.
Leslie is just in a nice blue shirt. Yeah. I don't know what that says about the wine, but let's see. And then your other movie?
The other movie, now actually, funny enough, both my movies today are about a family being trapped in a house that they can't really escape from because there's something trying to kill them outside.
Very COVID-esque.
Very COVID-esque. So this is The Last House, and it's new to Netflix, and it's about, again, a family gets trapped in their house. There's literally this force that is stopping them from opening all their doors and windows. They physically cannot leave their house, and it's this kind of mystery as to what is going on, how long are they going to be stuck there for, and just what on earth is outside that door.
That'd be a trigger warning for anyone who lives in a house, wouldn't it?
It would. And actually, in both these films, we have we will have to discuss dogs and potential doggy deaths.
Yes.
So this is all very on brand today, guys. Look at us go.
We've already given a trigger warning for this.
Yeah.
So stay tuned. After the break, we will be getting in to dogs dying or possibly not.
Water's not working.
Looks like the whole neighborhood's lost power.
I don't need you to worry
about me. What the hell is that?
And leave.
I think that our neighborhood, our house, our whole street has moved.
Now the hell is that even possible?
Get out of there, run!
What the hell's going on?
Get inside now!
I just heard a gunshot!
That was a clip from The End of Oak Street, which I'm delighted to hear features Billy Joel, greatest piano player of all time. And our producer, Caoimhe Earnaí, is also delighted. However, let's get to the movie, Olivia. What's going on in this?
So essentially, like, this family, they are at this like block party and they're having like the time of their lives. They go home, and then at night there's this like kind of like weird flashing light, and all these weird things just start happening in the neighborhood over the next couple of days, and it all encompasses in the entire neighborhood is transported back in time to prehistoric era, and they are all trying to figure out what the heck is happening, how did we get here, and how are we going to survive. And it's this really weird sort of thing of like, when I was watching the trailer, I was like, this looks like it's going to be absolutely awful.
Yes.
Went to see the film. Oh my goodness, this is absolutely brilliant. It's just stupid fun. And I am one of those people who loves these stupid fun movies. It makes zero sense, but it also doesn't have to. It doesn't explain anything to say, oh, here's the science behind what's happened to us. No, they don't even go through that. They make a suggestion of like a potential wormhole thing, and then they just sort of dismiss it and move on. Nothing is explained, and it works in their favor because then they don't get tied up in all of the explanation of it all.
Okay, and this is Anne Hathaway and Ewan McGregor as husband and wife, reasonably happily married in a house?
There's a little bit of tension there. So there's clearly issues in the relationship that she wants to discuss. He's kind of like, I know, everything's grand, and then runs away. So he's clearly like avoiding having the conversations because he's afraid that she might leave him. So they're definitely having issues. And then add on top of it, now they're trapped in a house together. You know, you can kind of see where this is going. But they do kind of like in parts try and like work things out and learn how to work together, even if they're not necessarily getting on very well. I think Anne is she's just spectacular in a lot of things, but in this in particular, because even though it's not something where you'd expect her to be like really like chewing the scenery, she is really doing a great job. Ewan, on the other hand, not so much, okay. But I think also his character isn't as well developed as hers is.
Okay.
Like Denise is like a fully formed, like whoever wrote this is like, I know who this character is, and the husband is just going to be the guy who's kind of annoying her, so to speak. So that's kind of the way that he was written. So there's a few little dialogue-y bits that are a little bit clunky, but overall I actually thought that it was so much better than I expected, but then also just a lot of fun. Like, it's quite funny as well.
Yeah. And is there any moral to it? Is it a fable of any kind, or is it just a straight ahead mad piece of action science fiction with dinosaurs?
To me, a straight ahead mad piece of like dinosaurs. And actually something that I'm going to flag is that people who are like fans of like Jurassic Park and things like that, the dinosaurs are going to look quite different because there's been a lot of updates in like paleontology.
Different for the good?
Different for the good, I think, because they're actually more historically, well, I'm doing quote unquote historically accurate, because there's still like a lot of debate over these types of things, but you're going to see dinosaurs with feathers and with fur and all this type of thing. Right. So they're going to look different, but they are still the same dinosaur. So like raptors had feathers. Like that's something that people may or may not know, but it's in research these days that they've discovered that they probably did have feathers.
Right.
And so these raptors have feathers.
Okay, look at you. Text of the day, maybe to Paul in Dundrum. Was there a warning that a dinosaur might die? Just to prepare.
No, there wasn't. But to go back to Fionnuala's chatter earlier, Starbuck is the dog. He's so cute. But when, of course, they are transported to the ancient times, they look outside and they see, before they realize that they've gone through time travel, they look outside and, oh, Starbuck's gotten off his leash again, and they just literally see like this broken end of a leash. So of course your brain goes, he's been eaten by a dinosaur, and that's like the panic stations. Luckily he wasn't, and like as like Fionnuala said earlier, it's not a spoiler, we do know that the dog does make it to the end, but whether or not all the family does remains to be seen.
Oh,
okay, intriguing. And short, I gather, or not interminably long?
99 minutes.
Now you're talking.
Beautiful. And it was really nicely paced too. I was like, this is great. Gone are the days when there's just like, you're sitting there for 2 hours going, why is this 2 hours? No, this was a lovely 99 minutes, and it just flew by. It was brilliant. Okay. I loved it.
I'm not sure if Sean does star ratings, but hey, he's not here today. So I'm going to ask you for one out of five.
Out of five, 3.5.
3.5. You're not going to go 4. No, I don't
know. No, I think 4 is giving it too much credit, to be blunt. It's more kind of like on the fun and entertainment side of things than, say, like critically acclaimed, shall we? We'll go down that road.
You want a late summer movie that's just going to let you switch off for an hour
this
and a half.
This is definitely the movie for you.
Okay. And it's in cinemas from today.
In cinemas now.
In the darkened room, which we like people to
hopefully air conditioned.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Fionnuala, you haven't seen this by any chance?
No, I haven't.
Sure, it's only out today. Sorry, silly question. Leslie, I'm assuming you haven't done
it. I haven't seen it. I did see the trailer and it looked kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That is Leslie Williams, you heard there. And he has just handed us all our first wine. So this is the Muscadet from the Loire Valley.
Yes, so Lagrange is the name of the wine. Lagrange, Grange. The wine is Domaine Luno Papin. There's the 19th generation making this wine. Muscadet is literally in the suburbs of Nantes, of the city of Nantes, which was, as I was mentioning earlier, the capital of Brittany, with the Dukes of Brittany have their big castle and so on. And so I once said to the guy who founded the festival, Polik, I said, there's no Breton wines, because there wasn't really. There is a few now in sort of what we now think of as Brittany, but he says, got really angry with me, because Muscadet, as far as he's concerned, was Breton. And anyway, so Muscadet is this great fish wine. It's perfect with oysters.
Yeah.
Once this train line to Paris was established, it became the wine you drank with oysters in Paris. Chablis was the other option, but Muscadet and oysters is this thing is the absolute classic mix. It is seafood central in Brittany, and it is... So basic Muscadet is your entry level, right? And that's just Muscadet simply picked. Melon de Bourgogne is the grape, often called the Muscadet grape. And that is a very simple grape. But if you leave it on its lees, which is the dead yeast cell, so you leave it in the tank after it's fermented with the the yeast, dead yeast, basically for a couple of months. That the lees give it this creamy texture. It adds in tropical fruits and so on. And so if you're buying Muscadet, always look for a Surly. To be honest, they're mostly Surly, but you know, just so you know, Muscadet went through a really weird time. It was washed out, dry, simple, very boring. But a lot of the bad stuff is gone now. Vintages are warmer, so the grapes are now ripening. It was a region that had to chaptalize. It used to have to put sugar in it. But I think this has just got lovely melon, almost orange peel kind of character to it, some weight, some lovely dry, fresh. You can drink it ice cold straight from the fridge. It can still cope with that. Yeah.
Right. Olivia, what do you make of that?
Oh, absolutely delicious. Like, this is a type of wine that is definitely to my palate. It's like almost like on the sweeter side of things. It's not too dry. If something is too dry, my mouth just kind of goes, eh.
But believe it or not, there's like no sugar in this. Like,
really?
No, that's just the lees that have given you that impression of sugar. I mean, it's like, it would be low. It would be 1% maximum. So Whelan's wine set in Loughlinstown. The old Silver Tassie. It's a great shop.
Where my granddad used to run.
Oh, there you go, you see?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, so if anyone was ever served back in the early days of the Silver Tassie by a grumpy old man called Barry, that was my granddad.
Now, Leslie, this is probably, you know, Sean has gone through this for years, but like drinking that with fish, I was vaguely aware of that, but I mean, it's not like, no one's going to die if you drink that with a hamburger.
No, absolutely not.
Like, I mean, no, but all joking aside, like, I mean, the pairing thing often confuses me. I mean, it's not like, well, you're not a heathen to drink it with a steak.
No. I mean, I suppose I mentioned the oysters thing is because it has a briny freshness in the same way. So just it helps visualize what a wine tastes like. Mm. But no, absolutely. Jesus, I mean, you can drink. I mean, look, famously, a very rich friend of a friend of mine will only drink Latash. And Latash is a single vineyard that costs, well, in the used to cost about $3,000 or $4,000. Now it's about $15,000 a bottle, or maybe not 15, but certainly 10. And she would just drink it with fish. And the sommeliers in the rich restaurants would be like, "You can't do it, Monsieur Papi, it's possible." It's like, if I want to drink bloody Latash, and Latash is just stunning. I mean, and if you want to drink Chateau Cam, a really sweet wine, incredible wine, which is again, you know, probably about $1,000 a bottle. But why not? You know, I mean, no, there's absolutely no consequences. I will say though, if you're drinking a rich tannic red wine with fish.
Yeah.
It's a light fish like a sole or something or a place. It's gonna add metallic, right? It's gonna add some strange flavors.
Okay.
So put some extra salt on your fish, and you can absolutely still do it then. Okay. That's and maybe serve it a little cooler. Okay. There's nothing wrong with serving wine cool. I mean, the next red wine is gonna be cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'll mention the name again: Domaine Luneau Papin. Lagrange Muscadet. And interestingly, it's not in the typical Muscadet bottle. It's in what we call a Burgundy bottle. So you wouldn't spot it as a Burgundy on the shelf. You might think it was something like a Burgundy until you read the label. Yeah. I wonder if they're deliberate, actually, because they're going for that more riper, rounded, food-friendly style that you would get in Burgundy.
I can't believe there's no sugar in that. Delicious. Yeah. Fionnuala, before we get to a story or two, did you enjoy that?
Yes. Very, very juicy. Like a lot. I was actually going to take another sip there, and then I realised I had to talk. So
just put the glass down for a second.
He saw you reaching for it. He was just I better get it.
Tell me about Heated Rivalry season 2. I mean, Heated Rivalry has been a phenomenon. So what's going on?
It's currently in production, the second season, and it is looking to combine two of Rachel Reid's books. Rachel Reid is the brainchild behind this Game Changer series that the first series was based off of. So these books are going to be The Long Game and Role Model. So we'll still be focusing on Shane and Ilya, Connor Story and Hudson Williams, who broke out from that first season. But there's been a lot of casting news in the last few weeks. So we've had Charles Gillespie as Troy Barrett. People might remember him from Splitsville from last year. Apparently he's very good in that. I haven't seen it. And then we also have Justice Smith has been cast as Harris Drover, who I remember from Detective Pikachu, but he's been in loads of other stuff. He's been in I Saw the TV Glow, among others. There's been some criticism around the casting. We were talking about this off air, that like how the books kind of work is, like, obviously there's a hockey theme, but it's not necessarily always between two hockey players, the relationships, we'll say. So in terms of this book that they're in, which I'm 90% sure is Role Model, Harris is supposed to be kind of more plus size, I suppose. And that's kind of a part of the contention of his relationship with Troy Barrett, because he's obviously this big, hunky, muscular hockey player. There's been some criticism of Justice Smith's casting because some fans believe that he doesn't really fit that ideal now, and they wonder now, is the story going to be changed, and then has become a completely different story. Rachel Reid herself has come out on social media to say, you were mad about Ilya and Shane's casting too, and now you're obsessed with them, so just relax, like, we'll see how this goes. And lots of other casting news as well in terms of some other like ancillary characters. We have Emily Hampshire has been cast as Vanessa. Emily Hampshire, probably most famously from Schitt's Creek. She's Stevie in Schitt's Creek. Edving Riding is playing Luca. He was in Young Royals. Then we also have some Canadian actors and comedians. Robert Naylor is going to play Wyatt. Sabrina Jalise is going to play Farah. And then we have Priyanka is playing Tarek. Priyanka was a winner of Canada's Drag Race, mm-hmm. like drag superstar royalty. So yeah, it's all go. I will say this show just brings nothing but drama and contention, yeah. because we also had Dylan Walsh, who plays Hudson Williams' dad in the show, plays Shane's dad in the show. He is after getting in trouble. He plays David Hollander, I should say. He got in trouble this week because he was on Cameo, you know, that app where you yeah. can commission videos from celebrities to be like, say happy birthday to Fionnuala, and they do. He was making videos for someone.
For a price, right?
For a yeah. price. For a price. That's important to stress, right? And it's a very interesting exercise to see what people are charging. Yeah, anyway, he was on that website temporarily, but he got in a little bit of trouble this week because he recorded a video for someone in which he accidentally leaked that they were going to be making 12 episodes this Ooh. Season. As opposed to the 6 that were in the first season. Yeah, so
that's a serious.
Yeah, he had to post stepping away because a video went viral that got me in trouble. He had to post that on his Cameo account. And now he's not allowed to make Cameo videos until August 2027. So I can imagine someone in HBO going, get that man off the website, please, quick.
Yeah. And for people who don't know, Fionnuala said Troy Barrett, nothing to do with Troy Parrott.
Yes.
Just to be clear about that. Just remind people where they can watch. I can't remember off the top of my head. Heated Rivalry is available to watch where?
Heated Rivalry will be on now if you want to okay. watch it.
And I know this is a big picture thing, but it has been this phenomena for all sorts of reasons, many of them justified. Do you think it was amazing TV?
I loved it.
Okay.
I just think, considering that they made it on a shoestring budget, kind of nobody thought it would really amount to anything because it was made on this Canadian streamer. It was very, very small and then it became absolutely huge. I will say, in terms of the actors, I've been pretty impressed by them in terms of their performances within this show. Mm-hmm. It remains to be seen whether that kind of carries over into any other performances. Okay. But I thought it was really beautiful. And having gone back, so I watched this and then went back and read some of the books.
Okay.
I don't love the books, I'll right. be honest. I think what they were able to get out of the books to bring to screen yeah. is beyond impressive. So
Okay. Point well made. Leslie, there's a text in saying, tell us the name of the wine again and where okay. it's available.
So Whelan's Wine Shop, also online. He does deliveries all over the country. So whelanswines.ie. Okay. And it is called Domaine Luno Papa. But in big letters, it says La Grange.
Yeah, and it's a Muscadet.
It's a Muscadet.
Yeah.
And if you go to the shop, it's just kind of go to the second bay. It's just there.
Wow, giving this precise location.
Yeah, so down the stairs into where
you'll
the
wine is. You'll enter a dark tunnel.
Second bay in and on the left.
Fionnuala, this is a contentious one, but the 7 most boring movies have been compiled by fans
yes.
or anti-fans or whatever. So do you want to give us a quick 7?
Yes, so Redditors got together to decide the 7 most boring films of the century. Well, I think they've done a whole list, but these were the top 7, which I thought were interesting. So coming in at 7, we have Megalopolis, Francis Ford Coppola's 2024, more like Megaflopolis, am I right, girls? Way.
I suffered through that.
Not Adam Driver.
No, the one who's completely overacted, but in a brilliant way. The wife. She was in.
Not Aubrey Plaza.
If only we had some movie experts.
I was like, I know Aubrey Plaza was in.
Okay, very pretty. Was in Parks and Recreation, famously.
Aubrey Plaza.
If it hadn't been for Aubrey Plaza, you could not
we
get through
that.
It. She's amazing. Yeah.
But I wouldn't have classified it as boring, really. I would have classified that more as okay.
I fell asleep.
It is very long.
I expected it to be higher up that list, actually.
Okay.
Well, also got a standing ovation at Cannes, but there you go. Number 6.
That means nothing in this day and age. The Dead Don't Die is in at number 6. This is a very starry 2019 zombie film. Bill Murray, Adam Driver, Tilda Swinton, Steve Buscemi, lots of people calling it a plotless, pointless anti-film, as one Redditor said. Then we had Skinamarink, which was from 2022. This is a Canadian kind of experimental horror film. Kind of walked, so back rooms could run. People just thought it was too stretched out. It goes on for an hour 40 and they said it would have been a more compelling short film. Also said it was very hard to see, like had that Game of Thrones lighting thing where it was like, this isn't scary, I just can't see anything that's going on. Napoleon comes in at number 4. This from Ridley Scott, 2023, starring Joaquin Phoenix. Said they should have focused more on the military tactics as opposed to his issues with his wife. They said they weren't that interested
and
in that.
They made all that stuff up. There's these amazing love letters between Napoleon and Josephine.
And
he was good in bed. That implied he was not. I mean, you know, he does have faults, but I mean, you know, I mean.
There you go.
I mean, that implied the movie. I love Ridley Scott, but I mean.
Yeah.
He got the hump about the reception it got. He was very cheap.
Yeah.
Because it was cost, I presume, billions and millions to make.
So much money.
But he's a great filmmaker. What was he thinking? I don't know.
Conan the Barbarian comes in at number 3, the 2011 reboot starring Jason Momoa. I have no memory of this.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Then, unsurprisingly, we have Joker, Folie à Deux, coming in at number 2, the Joker sequel. Movie. Yeah.
That was that bad. But anyway, and then Number one
is a French documentary called Direct Action that came out in 2024 and was about a radical environmental activist farming community. But basically, the way the movie is shot, it's split up into 5-minute segments where the camera is just in the corner of a room where they're going about their day. So for 5 minutes, you're watching people fix a wheel. You might be watching people setting potatoes, baking bread.
Sounds great.
It's 3.5 hours.
Oh my God.
So people said, you know, after the first hour, it just became like meditation. So if you
What's that called again?
Direct Action.
Direct Action. Maybe we can check that
some
out.
Some meditative
watching.
I don't
mind writing that down. Well,
you've got big plans this weekend.
For anybody with like insomnia, it'd be a great one to help
you
fall asleep.
Yeah.
My French friends were telling me that the De Gaulle movie, the 6-7 hour long one, is amazing. That they have bought. Yeah.
What film do you think of all time is the most boring?
It's the most boring.
I'm sorry, I'm putting you on the spot there. But.
Oh God. I don't know. You'd have to leave that with
me. Okay. Well, we'll come back.
There were some of them on this that I was like, are they boring? Or are they just like find a lot of value in like bad and unwieldy stuff that it's like, this is bad, but it's kind of so bad it's good, you know, that way. Boring is like a mortal sin to commit as a filmmaker, I think.
Well said. I'm in studio with Leslie Williams, Fionnuala Jones and Olivia Fahey. We have more movies and booze to come after the break.
I saw someone outside today.
What is something out there? It's keeping us trapped.
What do we do?
We survive. This is going to end one day.
Ooh, this is going to end one day. That is from The Last House, which I gather is on Netflix, Olivia Fry.
Is
that correct?
Yes, and I just listening to the list of the top 7 most boring films, I actually think this one should go on it as well. It did not do it for me.
It involves a house, I'm assuming.
It involves a house. It involves a family trapped in a house. It involves some weird things happening outside that they don't really fully understand.
No dinosaurs.
No dinosaurs this time, but there is something to do with water. There's a lot of rain and the water looks like it's the thing that's kind of sealing the house up. Okay. And you don't find out until like towards the end of the film as to what that actually entails and what that means. It's actually from Louis Leterrier. I can't actually pronounce his surname, but he did like the Transporter films, Now You See Me, Fast X. Like he's done like a load of kind of more action-y films, whereas this is definitely more intense and supposed to be kind of spooky and thrillery. Stars Greta Lee and Wagner Moura. And they are like the parents in this family. And it kind of goes through like how they are coping with being stuck inside. And I have to say, like, it kicks off straight away. Like, you're not left hanging on to be like, when are they going to get trapped in the house? They are trapped in the house within the first 5 or 10 minutes of the film. But then they're like, it's like, okay, this is nearly a 2-hour long film. How are they going to keep this going of them being stuck in the house for the next 2 hours? Well, they have the kids like with a routine. They're doing like PE with them. They're trying to do schoolwork, especially at first when they think, oh, this could all be over within like a couple of days and whatever. But then the weeks and the months and the years go on and it just keeps going. There was a moment when I was like, okay, so this is like building up to like the grand finale now. Nope, there's still 50 minutes left in the film.
But what's the predator? Is it liquid outside? Like, I don't quite understand what, or maybe you can't say.
So that's what I'm trying to figure out. How much can I say? Like, I do have the answer to that question.
Oh, okay, but maybe you don't want to give a spoiler.
Kind of like more of a spoiler to the end, but the creatures do need more water to survive.
Okay,
so it's raining constantly.
No more be said.
And then that's probably as much as I can say in that sense. But
so
You don't see them until like about halfway through the film,
okay.
though.
Okay.
So you're left kind of wondering like, oh, what's going on here? And unlike like the end of Oak Street, where a lot of like the violence and the gore and the mystery was kind of like hidden behind like a gap in the fence and things like that. Mm. That was done like really cleverly. This is just like, you're like just waiting and waiting and waiting for some sort of answer or clue. You're not really given it until like later on. And now I will say, once the reveal kind of comes in, like the jump scare was a good one. Mm. But it was still like, not satisfying.
Yeah, too late in the process.
It was too late, yeah.
Okay. So this didn't work for you at all?
No, which is sad. I was like, there were some really good things. Like the effects were great. I really thought they had done a really good job with that. But even like the dialogue in the opening narration, and like you need to have a good flow in like this, or like the intro of where you're trying to like set the scene. There needs to be some sort of flow, but it was very like sentence, sentence. And even like with the dialogue in some scenes, that's how it was going. There was no actual, like, it didn't seem like there was any connection between the two lead actors or anything like that. So It was really hard to kind of get into it because it almost felt like stoppy-starty with the dialogue. And it was just boring in places as well. So I felt really bad because I don't like trashing films because people don't set out to make bad ones.
Indeed.
But this one really didn't do it for me. If it does it for other people, then please help me understand. But yeah, for me, it was like a no.
Star rating then?
One.
Okay, pretty bad. And over 2 hours long, which is great news. Fionnuala, it'll interest you to know Any Given Sunday, unless you're an American fan, also the American football fan, also The Blind Side, Boring as Watching Paint Dry, and Kevin Costner's one, Build It and They Will Come, which I presume they made Field of Dreams. That's pretty hard.
That was a pretty decent film. I don't know nothing about baseball.
Although I do remember the film that I actually think is probably should be on that list, The Big Short.
Yes.
Which I love, The Big Short.
I fell asleep.
I mean, what is not to love about your woman in the bath and
diverging interests, I fear. And I will say Jeremy Strong looks incredibly well in that film, so he's doing it more for me. I don't want to hear people talk about money and things that I don't understand, like Mickey Mouse money.
But they explained it really well.
No.
I also agree with you.
Margot
on that
Robbie
one.
Explained it extremely well. Okay. So I listened to everything she said.
That was the point of her scene, though, kind of, wasn't it? That it's all this, you know, highfalutin talking. And then let's put Margot Robbie in that. Yeah. You mentioned Jeremy Strong.
Yeah.
He's sending Zuckerberg emails.
Yes. So Jeremy Strong is going to be playing Mark Zuckerberg in Aaron Sorkin's follow up to The Social Network, The Social Reckoning. And it just basically means we're on a Jeremy Strong press tour, which is on my favorite time of the year because he is he just gives great interviews and great little sound bites. Obviously Jesse Eisenberg played him in the first film. Jesse wasn't keen to play it again, and Strong told Sorkin as much. He's like, if Jesse's not going to do it, I'll do it, kind of throwing his hat in the ring. And he's talked about the role. He said, it's that kind of role that fascinates me. It's like Sebastian Stan playing Trump, because obviously they work together in The Apprentice. You are wearing the cape. It's like Jeremy Allen White playing Bruce Springsteen. It's like the perils of that could not be greater. To commit to it and to be free within it is a great challenge. Like everything he says in this GQ cover piece, it's unbelievable. Anyway, he says when he joined the project, then he emailed Zuckerberg and he said he probably, maybe he wasn't supposed to say this, but he said, I'm probably going to give Sony an aneurysm. I sent him an email just to say that I take this responsibility very seriously and the veracity of it seriously, and I'm approaching it with respect. And he says he wrote back, but he didn't reveal in the interview what he said. So I'd be very intrigued to learn that. He did also say that there was kind of an open invitation to maybe meet up, but he didn't meet up with him in the lead up to preparing for this film, because I think the trailer kind of has divided people, but I think people were pretty impressed by how much he sounds like Mark Zuckerberg. It is freaky. The way that man will commit to a voice is beyond.
Okay. I'm sure Sony aren't thrilled about him saying, you know, I was emailing Zuckerberg and, you know, he's going to get back to me. I don't think they love that kind of stuff. But anyway, someone else texts in about The Last House. How is this film so highly watched by Netflix survivors is beyond me. It's currently number one, they seem to be suggesting.
I think it's like the curiosity effect. Mm. And because like the director is kind of known for making like all right kind of like action films, so him doing a thriller is intriguing. And, you know, as much as like people have been bashing it, it is also one of those things of, well, people are like, oh, okay, is this movie that bad? And then they go to the streamer to see, is it actually that bad? There are like bad movie nights, and I think this would actually be a pretty damn good one for
It's a good cat. Like, if you hear Greta Lee in your Vagamore, you're going to go, maybe I will watch this. Also, it had a really viral they did, and I'm sorry, viral in inverted commas, because what does that even mean anymore? But they did like a billboard in Los Angeles where they had a fella living in the billboard to replicate the film, and that generated a lot of buzz, I think. So then people, I think, saw that or read about it and were like, oh, maybe I'll watch this.
It's the curiosity effect, for sure. Yeah.
Leslie, Red Wine is in front of us, and this is also from the Loire Valley, the other side.
Yes, yeah, the Loire kind of heads straight inland, right? So it hits the sea at, well, about a half an hour after Nantes. But then it goes in past Angers, Tours, and then that's Vouvray country. And then it eventually gets to Sancerre, which you probably know, which actually at this point is actually heading south. And then it goes significantly further south. So this is actually near Roanne, R-O-A-N-N, the town of Roanne, which is famous. Foodie people will know the Trois Gros family are there. Three Michelin star restaurants since 1968. It's one of the food capitals of France, thanks purely to this one family who just make amazing food. And this producer, Domaine Serral, makes wines with the Trois Gros family. And this is independent. It's a small little appellation. I mean, you're between Clermont-Ferrand, which is this massive central in the Auvergne, and Lyon, which is the capital of the Rhone, if you know what I mean. So north of Rhone is Beaujolais, south of Rhone is Crows Hermitage, Côte Rôtie, northern Rhone, okay? Yeah. So you're between, and then Beaujolais would be basically just a little bit closer. Okay, so I mean, so it's right there, quite far, southern central France. Gamay is the grape, which makes sense because that's also the grape in Beaujolais, which is only about an hour away. And so tiny region, I mean, only like 300 hectares or something, which is really small. This producer, I think, only has about 10, 11 hectares. So I actually had this, I'm going to name check where I had this first. I had this in Omos restaurant, this new amazing guest house restaurant run by Kuan Green down in Abbey Leaks. And it's on the grounds of a state owned by one of the Collison lads from Stripe and so on. So a lot of money's been put into this. I mean, not just by him, I think Kuan has his own investors, but okay. Extraordinary meal. Can I just take one of the highlights? The highlight,
okay.
I mean, the highlight of the meal, and I can't believe how good this was. In the middle of the meal, a potato arrived. It had been cooked, a beautiful new potato. It had been cooked in salted, herbed water with a big lump of butter from Jersey cows from County Kildare, homemade in the kitchen, and it was just the best. It was like,
you've thought of butter, little else since.
So my review will be out on the 22nd in the Irish exam. But anyway, I loved it. And so I drank this with it, and the wine actually worked really well. We served it a little cool. It is cherries. It is crispy. It's not cold now. I've served it. It's probably at about 12 degrees at this point, which is about 10 degrees maybe. What do you think?
Cherry definitely.
Ooh. Yeah, sort of strawberry, bright fruits, crunchy. So crunchy is a word we mean by where you can get some texture in your mouth.
That
you can
lovely.
Chew it a little bit. And just this kind of weather, I don't think you want to drink silky Pinot Noirs and things. You want to drink something with a bit of bite and a bit of character.
It seems perfect for this time of year.
And yeah, and looking at it, I don't think it's not crazy expensive, but it's very, very drinkable, I think.
Where can people get
this? So I have a list of the suppliers here, so are the shops that it's available in. So Green Man Wines in Ternier Road, on Ternier Road there in Ternier. Mm. 64 Wines Last Soul, Wheelahan's again at Loughlinstown, the former Silver Tassie. Drinkstore and Stony Butter. Great shop, actually. Better people know that. And Fionella in Frisburg. That's a really cool shop there. Just on you're coming to the crossroads in Frisburg, Borgers on your right, turn left, and the shop is just there. It's also a little wine bar. And Pinto Wines in Drumcondra, opposite where Bertie Ahern used to drink, if you know. The pub where... Lots of people did, yes.
The Goose.
Yes, it's a famous pub because...
Yes, exactly. It was a pub he was drinking in.
Yeah, well, once or twice.
Which he was entitled to do.
Of course he was.
From time to time.
Yes, every
now
and then.
We all have.
Yes, exactly.
As we scatter around.
They have artwork that he did in there as well.
Yeah, give us the name of the wine again.
So it is Éclat de Granit, okay?
Éclat de Granit.
Yes, so it's a celebration of granite, which is the soil, and it's Domaine Serral, and it's a Côte Rouennaise, I was going to say it in French, 2023. It's 2023.
And it's a Gamay wine.
It's a Gamay based, lovely, bright, fresh fruit.
Yeah, that is
delicious. And can I suggest that, by the way, Gamay is a grape that is grown throughout the Loire. We think of it as a Cabernet Franc country, mm-hmm. And also then Pinot Noir around Sancerre and other parts. But in you'll find a lot of IGP entry-level Gamays in the Loire. And the grape grows really well there.
Okay.
And it's not something you have to worry about.
Fionella, did you have a taste?
Yes, very nice. Yeah. Very juicy. Yeah. I feel like I said juicy about both, but they were both juicy. So
Olivia?
I'm a big cherry fan, so that was lovely.
Maybe these kind of texts come in every Friday, I'm not sure. But for the wine man, it says, can your food match my chill can of Dutch Gold, please, Leslie? I'm just sitting outside Fallon and Byrne. I think they're being humorous.
You know, but, okay, yeah.
They probably won't let him drink the can of Dutch Gold.
But there's a little Chinese place you can just around the corner, just like very near there, he can go to, and it'd be great with a spice pack. great with fish and chips. Yeah.
You love champagne and a chipper.
I do, yeah, totally. I mean, McDonald's in Reims, in Reims, the capital of champagne, you can get champagne for your burger and chips.
Oh, wow.
That sounds nice.
It works.
Yeah. Fionnuala, tell us about Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews is not going to be in Princess Diaries 3, to which I say, what's the point then? Call it all off. Oh, no. The way this was kind of reported initially was maybe they didn't ask her back or something, or she was going to be cut out. That's not what happened. She was speaking to the Hollywood Reporter with her daughter, mm-hmm. and obviously it came up because the film is coming at some stage. Anne Hathaway is back as the titular princess, Mia Thermopolis. And
Anne Hathaway is very busy, isn't she?
She's so busy. I was actually going to say that when we were talking about this film, but anyway, she's working on that.
I just did those. So.
Yeah, so perfect. Thank God. She's basically said, Julie Andrews is 90, and by her own admission, she said, I'm really past all that now. And when she says all that now, she means that type of work. She says, I'm not completely retired, but it's a different kind of work that I do these days. She's writing books, she's doing podcasts and stuff like that. She says she doesn't think she should be a part of it, and she's not really up for being in stuff that's on camera anymore necessarily. But she also did say, it isn't that I'm not enthusiastic for it, it's just that I really don't feel I should be part of it now. So then there's a cynical part of me that's like, so are they preparing some kind of teeny tiny cameo and they don't want to confirm it yet, so that there are inevitably, and I'm not sure if this is a direct streamer or if it will be going to theatres, but is it so that we will watch to see how, because it's not, they're not going to acknowledge her in the film, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I do wonder how she will pop up. She also says she has no idea what the plot of the third one is, so don't ask her, please.
Okay, yeah, it does sound like a small cameo is on the way. A lot of people texting in about saying, I really wish I hadn't watched The Last House. Fionnuala, just finally then, movie theatre cinema, I believe they're called.
Yes.
Spider-Man poster, very clever thing they did in Canada.
Yes, this is very clever and kind of happened by accident. So this was a theatre in British Columbia. It's a famous Players Theatre. They never got any posters for the new Spider-Man film, Spider-Man Brand New Day. So instead, one of the staff members, Drake Langdon, decided to draw his own posters, and they've gone like semi-viral. He was talking in the Hollywood Reporter about it this week. They basically did up a poster in which he's crudely drawn Spider-Man. It's kind of based off of the Spooderman meme, if anyone is as chronically online as me. And on the poster, there's a caption that says, sorry, we never received the real posters. Sorry for any inconvenience.
That's brilliant. So that's absolutely brilliant. This has been Movies and Booze with me, John Fardy, in for Sean today. We've been in the company of Leslie Williams, Fionnuala Jones and Olivia Fahey. I just have to thank the production team. Hugo De Silva Scott was on sound. Research was by Simon Tierney and Amanda Uwaz. Claire Darmody and fellow Billy Joel producer Quiva Hart. Billy Joel producer, Billy Joel fan, devotee, I should say. She wishes she was Billy Joel producer. It's getting weird. Quiva Harney, I better go.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.